Dallas, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for joining us here on the Daily Program. Now, looking at the housing affordability crisis here in Australia, is it as bad as we hear reported? The housing affordability crisis, is it as bad? What is the actual extent of the crisis as it currently stands?
Well, the housing affordability crisis as it stands is a crisis that is one of many crises or crises that we've had over Australia's history. So if we go back in time, we can see a number of crises in land and real estate. And this is a particularly important one for our epoch, and one that actually is going to get more intense as we're going forward. You just talked about intergenerational wealth transfer in your introduction. So that's where parents of, typically baby boomer parents, are helping their baby boomer kids get into the real estate market, normally by redeploying some of the capital that they've generated through their property investments from the mid-20th century. And as you rightly pointed to in that introduction, this is going to create a huge disparity between those who can draw on that intergenerational wealth to get into the real estate market and those who can't moving forward. So we are really at the beginning of the housing affordability problem, the housing affordability crisis, if you like. It's going to intensify in places like Sydney if we don't actually do something pretty dramatic to address it.
Dallas, you've indicated a belief that some of the reasons behind the crisis are in how we think about land and real estate. Can you could you possibly expand on that for us?
Sure. So I've been doing a research project called the Global Real Estate Project, and I've been interviewing foreign investors and foreign global real estate agents, migration agents, trying to get a handle on what's happening in the foreign real estate investment market to talk back to my long-term research question, which is, what is the relationship between housing, poverty, and wealth in global cities? And when I started looking at that data we were collecting, I needed to think about the history of foreign real estate investment. And I thought that would be a relatively easy thing to do in Australia. I could go back and find out sort of the regulatory framework that have framed foreign real estate investment. But actually, when you go back and look at the history of the way that we've moved people and capital, so foreign people and their money, through Australian land and real estate, it turns out to be a story that goes right back to RMIT academic Libby Porter calls the original dispossession, basically the time when the colonizers stole the land from Australia. And this changes the way we think about land and real estate in Australia, because it shows that in the middle of the 20th century, we locked down the way we think about land and real estate, and we tried to build the great Australian dream around a particular notion of Australian identity and culture. But before that and after that, actually, the movement of global people and capital through land and real estate has been the modus operandi for Australia. So the great Australian dream in the middle of the 20th century was really just a short stop in what is a history of foreign investment in land and real estate. And thinking about land and real estate as a place to store capital is basically how we get to the housing affordability problem we have today.
Mm. Looking at these kinds of foreign investment as they currently stand in the Australian market, we tend to see them, well, reported fairly thoroughly, and a lot of fingers pointed by politicians and by certain media outlets saying that foreign buyers are one of the key concerns behind the current housing crisis. Yet we hear other reports that say, well, percentage-wise, they are of little difference. What is your take on the issue?
I think the first thing to say about this is there is a real danger in thinking about foreign real estate investment just as a regulatory category. So just as the rules that the government sets up to regulate the flow of people and capital. And there's also a danger in thinking about foreign real estate investment just as an economic process. So just as the movement of capital. What foreign investment is, it is those things, and that is the way we think about them, but it also includes people's lives and people's mobility, and it includes very real homes. And what's missing from a lot of the debate, what we tend to hear is very sensationalist headlines about a 900% increase in capital. And that may be true, but really that's just a symptom of a greater problem that's going to emerge in Australia. And that's the problem with how we think about land and real estate. So what I'm arguing for and what I argue for in my new book is to think about all the ways that we might think about the globalization of real estate. And that includes thinking about history, so how people have historically moved into land and real estate. That would include indigenous dispossession. That would include the colonial era where we decided not to give land away and to sell it, to use migration and the movement of people to bring their labor to the colony to generate wealth, which they would go on to buy land. It would include the Great Australian Dream. And we need to think about all of these processes up until today, the rise of China and the way that the rise of China is producing wealth that is now globally mobile and moving into Australian real estate and other real estate around the world.
That is quite an expansive way to be looking at the current situation with the housing crisis here in Australia. I guess from a practical point of view, for a lot of young people who have these concerns about living in Sydney, funnily enough, there's this UNSW study on housing affordability that shows most suburbs which have become much less affordable is in Western Sydney. Even from working with UWS, how difficult is it for young people to actually to be finding a property? I mean, if they're going to be working in Sydney, if we've got young people with careers or with jobs in Sydney, how difficult is it going to be for them to actually find a property as the city limits seem to be constantly expanding in this kind of hungry expansion for land?
It's going to be very difficult. And what I've advocated for in the past is actually starting to think about, basically, housing affordability is a question about how we use the land. That's what it comes down to. Developers want to get their hands on the land because they make their money off the increase in land values, not necessarily on the increase on the sale of those properties. It's the properties that are sitting on the land that matter. So if we actually want to address housing affordability, we actually have to think about what are the numerous ways we can think about the land and what will that mean. And just to give you a very quick example taken actually from Sydney, if you think about Redfern Waterloo, there are three different what I call land mentalities. That's just a fancy way of talking about the way we think about land. There are three different land mentalities at play in Redfern Waterloo. There is an Indigenous land mentality that shapes that area just north of Redfern Station, colloquially known as the Block. Mm-hmm. So that is one way of thinking about the land. Then since the Second World War, we've had another way of thinking about land, and that's land as a public communal asset. And when we think about land as a public communal asset, we do particular things with it. We build public housing on it, which is a great affordable housing option. We also do other things like build public schools on it, build public roads on it. So that's one way of thinking about the land. Another way of thinking about the land is as an individual private asset. And when we think about land as an individual private asset, we also do certain things with it. We build individual private homes on it. We build private schools, private toll roads, private hospitals. Now, I'm not arguing against private property. What I'm arguing for is a mixing up all these different ways of thinking about the land to provide a suite of different options for people that and a suite of different housing options. What we need is more affordable housing that's actually detached from the property market. The property market isn't a very good way of providing affordable housing because all it does is knock the money off the top of either the rental cost or the property purchase cost. What we need to do is start linking people's housing costs back to their income. So we need, and the only way to do that is to start with the way we think about the land and provide land and housing options that sit outside of the market. And add those to the existing suite of private property market and housing options that we have.
Mm. Well, Dallas, like I say, it is one of these ongoing issues that gets a lot of attention, but not always the right attention. Do appreciate your time. Do appreciate you joining us on the show this morning.
All right. Thanks for having me.